as I said in the email that maybe many of you saw, Pita did an amazing job with this topic on the first Sunday of this month, speaking about the Science of Mind textbook chapter on what it does. We started with the first chapter, which is called The Thing Itself, in January, and then in February we talked about the way it works. And this month we're talking about what it does. And of course, the thing itself is that which we call God or Spirit, that we have a million names for it, and none of them encompass what it is. We could talk about God forever and never exhaust the possibilities of what we could say about the divine. And that's one of the tenets of Science of Mind, that God is endlessly available to us to explore and to experience and to discuss and to live in and as and see it all around us. God is everywhere and everything there is. And then beyond that, the creative life force, the consciousness beyond all that is. So the endless exploration of God is the work of a lifetime and many lifetimes, and that is the power of exploring within ourselves, because we find that there is that depth and that infinity within ourselves, that eternity within who we are. So we talked about the thing itself in January, and in February we talked about the way it works, which is sometimes called the law of attraction or the law of cause and effect, the law of mental equivalence, or what you put out returns to you. All of that is about the impersonal nature of God. The fact that if one person uses the law and another person uses the law always works. It is neutral. And if you put out fear, you get fear, and if you put out love, you get love, and it's all a mirror of what is going on in our consciousness. That divine reflection of who we are is not judgmental. It doesn't choose for us. We choose for ourselves what we focus on, and as a result, we are choosing what we get back, whether we're conscious of that choice or not. And we always have the opportunity to up-level the frequency of the thoughts that we have and up-level the frequency of the results that come back to us. And so we talked about that in February. And in March, talking about what it does, Pita just nailed this chapter completely. And she's a wonderful teacher. And if you haven't heard her talk, if you weren't here and haven't listened to it on the net, I highly recommend it. Because I decided I wanted to focus rather specifically about one small paragraph that's in this particular chapter that is one that practitioners tend to talk about more than anything in the book. It's on page 43. The first paragraph, it says, "In an intelligent study of the teachings of the Science of Mind, we come to understand that all is love, and yet all is law. Love rules through law. Love is the divine givingness. Law is the way. Love is spontaneous. Law is impersonal." And then at the end of that little segment called Love Rules Through Law, it says, "Love points the way, and law makes the way possible." Well, I don't know if you've noticed that since I've been talking, I've been rocking. There's a reason for that. I gave a talk last Sunday in the morning, before I gave that talk, which was called Deepening into the Love. Coincidentally, I gave that talk and chose that talk before I realized that this chapter that I was speaking on this month myself, it was a couple of, month or so ago that I chose the name of that talk. I didn't realize that this was the Love Rules Through Law week that I would be talking about here. And last Sunday morning when I went into meditation before that talk, I had a really powerful spiritual experience. And I'd like to describe it to you and see if I could help share that with you in a way. So if you would close your eyes for just a moment. And what I experienced last Sunday was the ocean of love that we all exist in a way that I had actually once before experienced but didn't have the same context for it. I felt that I was the shore and the waves were washing over me. And so if you can imagine what it feels like to be the sandy beach and gentle waves simply lapping over your physical nature, the gentle waves of Source, the gentle love washing over your body in every moment, like the breath. Let's be quiet for a moment and just listen to the in and out of our breath. Breathing in, breathing out. Hearing the sound of the wave in your own breath. The inspiration of Source washing into us and breathing out of us. Washing in stillness, breathing out chaos. Washing in peacefulness, breathing out activity. Washing in love, breathing out anything unlike love. Washing in love, washing out anger or resentment. Washing in love, breathing out anything unlike love. Washing in love, washing in love, washing in love, washing out love. Washing in love, washing out love. Allowing ourselves to fill up with that divine love that's endlessly washing over us in waves. We exist in the ocean of love at all times. There has never been a moment when there was not a voice ever proclaiming, "This is my beloved child in whom I am well pleased." We exist in the love of God. We are the love of God. We were born to be love. We were born loved. Washing in love, washing out love. There is nowhere God is not. There is nowhere love is not. In every moment, that divine love washes over us, moves through us, and has the opportunity to be breathed out into the world. We take in love, we give out love. We take in love, we give out love. We were born filled with love. There has never been a moment when the truth of our being hasn't been absolutely filled to the brim and overflowing with love. There may have been times in our lives when, through filters of fear and habits of thought, we didn't know ourselves to be love or know ourselves to be loved. But there truly has never been a moment, not one, that we were not held in total nurturing support in the heart of God, in the ocean of life. Marianne Williamson said, "You are trying to contain an ocean in a vase. The truth of you is the ocean. You are the love. You are love washing in and out of the world with every breath that you take. We are all that. We are the love." Deepening into the love doesn't mean becoming something we are not. It means perceiving something we already are. We are the love. We are the love. We are the love. Underneath the activity of the love, there is stillness and gentleness and nurturing and peace. we can sink deeply into the infinite peace that underlies all of the activity. And the peace is filled with love. We can bubble up in the joy that is the expression of the divine in all of life. And through all that effervescent joy and passion, there is love. There is nowhere love is not, for there is nowhere God is not, and God is love. God is love. We are loved. We are loved. We are love. We are loving. We are beloved. Love is right here and right now. It is the truth of who we are. Love is. And love is all there is when we see clearly. If you feel comfortable, you can open your eyes or keep them closed, whatever feels good to you. Love ruling through law, what does that mean? It means that as we tap into that love and then know the power of our thinking and use the law to give out love, then love returns to us powerfully. And that love exists as health and prosperity and extraordinary opportunities for self-expression, as divine well-being. Sometimes people will say, "Thy will, not mine." And it feels like our individuality is taken away from one perspective. But from the perspective of Ernest Holmes, "Thy will, not mine" means God's vision of the extraordinary nature of life that the divine wants to live in us, as us, can be realized. God's will for us is so much bigger than anything we can imagine, because that essence of life that decided to express itself as each of us has such a clear and powerful knowing of this truth of our being, that we are powerful, that we are infinite, that we are connected and gifted and beautiful and free. And that vision of possibility exists in the infinite knowing of who we are. That is God's will for us. It is not separate from us. It is the truth of who we are that has wanted to express in us and as us from the moment we were born. And way before that, when we were being dreamed into being from the infinite perspective, that knowing that life is good and that the law responds to us as we put into it, and we have the capacity to choose. The capacity to focus is the most extraordinary gift that exists in all of life, because as we focus, we choose. We choose to be in the moment, in the space of saying, "I have an infinite number of things to focus on, and I choose right now to focus on something that brings up within me love. I choose to ignore the fear that other people have taught me or that other people are experiencing, and I choose to focus on the love that is here now." There is such beauty in every moment. My friend Margie said, life is in the details, and there's something in every scene that sparkles. And I continue to give shiny bracelets to lots of people because I want to remember myself that there's something in every scene that sparkles, and remember to focus on what sparkles for me. And I'm a visual person, so sparkles and light dancing on water is like the thing that most lifts me up. Colors just knock my socks off. But for you, it might be harmony. It might be the voice in the quiet that you hear when you get still enough to recognize that voice forever proclaiming, "This is my beloved child in whom I am well pleased." Or it might be a feeling for you. You might be a kinesthetic person, and it might be the rocking. It might be the motion of spirit that moves within you, the feeling of the presence. Whatever that experience of God that you have that is unique to you, the birth of a profound idea that just sparkles in your mind, however you experience that, or the when something touches your heart. I get things on the internet. People send me things that touch them and invite me to be touched by them. And this week I got one about a high school football game in Texas. I don't know if any of you have seen it, but it's about some boys who are convicted of something and have been put in jail as teenagers and haven't yet finished high school. And so they're going to high school in prison, essentially a serious lockdown prison. And as a gift for good behavior, they're allowed to play football. And that's the only experience they have of being normal teenagers, is the ability to express themselves through the game. And they are challenged to play football, and it looks to me like there are 14 boys on this team, and they have to play teams that have a normal roster with an offense and a defense and the opportunity to play freely, and these boys have very limited ability to express this. And so all their games are away games because people can't come into the prison, and they had lost 8 games in a row, but they were still psyched about playing football. And on the 9th game, this is going to make me cry, they played at a Christian school, and the coach of the other high school team realized that they never had any fans. Their parents couldn't come watch them play football. And the other side of the field was always empty when they played. And this coach sent out an email and asked the fans of their school to be fans for these boys. And when they got there, there was a spirit line for them to run through, and they were applauded and welcomed, and the cheerleaders cheered for their side as well as the other side. And those boys had the experience of forgiveness, of being welcome to have a second chance to be in life and to be loved. And what an extraordinary expression of that was for some of these boys. That was the first time that they'd ever really felt accepted and belonging and loved. And that was such a powerful gift that coach gave and that those parents gave to cheer for these boys rather than their own boys, to recognize that all of the boys were deserving of love, that all of the boys were giving their best. And they lost another game, but they felt like they'd finally won. They felt like they'd finally seen that there was a possibility in the outside world that they wouldn't be shunned as they had been pretty much at the other football games that they'd played, but rather that they could return to a world that was filled with love for them. And isn't that, I mean, I shouldn't ask it as a question. I would say that I want to grow up to be like that. I want to grow up to be one who embraces in love. And I do that as much as I can every day to find the place today where my love flows, where I can include someone, where I can offer a smile or a gift or a word or and some energy, my presence, to uplift and inspire somebody. Each day, every day, there is an opportunity to encounter somebody who might find your love that lifeline to more hope and to more opportunity. I don't know if I've told this story here before. Maybe I have, but it's worth repeating. Last year when I was at the water retreat with Daniel Namod, there was a woman named Ursula from Atlanta, a young, fit, vibrant young woman who was hiking all of these hikes that were hard for me at altitude, that she was doing them easily and well. And early in the week, I was flowing with some of the easier hikes and helping some of the other flatlanders who had gone up there and didn't know how to hike. And I'd lived in Colorado for years, so although I was not in the shape I was in when I lived in Colorado, I was able to help earlier in the week. But when we got to the Fiery Furnace walk, which is about a 3.5 hour walk that includes scrabbling over a lot of rocks and moving through very narrow spaces and walking on ledges with no railings that are very narrow and have deep drops off and stuff, challenging some of the fears that I have, for sure. We started down this first incredibly steep incline, and I realized you can't go back the way you came out in. You know, mm-hmm. You got to keep going. You can't stop here. You got to get through it, and the way you get through it is to work with everybody else. And Ursula was a helper, and there were a number of helpers in the group. And I was sort of at the lead of the pack by the end, and really, you know, accepting help and going it alone, recognizing that in this situation, I was not one of the strong ones who was helping. I was one of the weaker ones who was accepting help. But there were others who were doing less well than I was, who were accepting help from the stronger ones who stayed behind to help. And one of those was a man who had fallen and broken his foot about a half mile before the end of the walk. And that part of the walk was a very steep downhill stairway, again with no railing and a deep drop-off. And he was limping badly, walking on a broken foot. And Ursula went to help him. And she made eye contact with him and said, "I'm here and I'm going to get you through this." And he believed her. And she helped him down that incline. And when he got to the bottom, he looked at her and he said, "What did you do to me? I feel like I could sprint to the parking lot." Mm-hmm. And she said to him, "I gave you my energy." She said to me later that day, "What I really did was love him. But I didn't think he was ready to hear that, nor his wife." What I did was love him. And he felt it, and he drew on her energy, and he made it down that just fine, and he made it back up to the parking lot just fine. The energy of love is so healing. It is so powerful. And we have that within us to give. And the following morning, the last day of last year's retreat, he got up to tell that story about what Ursula had done for him. And there was a person sitting behind me. Everybody was in tears by the time he got done talking about what a powerful experience that had been for him with Ursula. But the woman behind me gasped. And she stood up after he was finished speaking. And she said, "You know, I've been married for 35 years. And for 35 years, I've been holding this family together. We had 4 children. My husband never changed a diaper. He never cooked a meal. He never drove a child to a soccer practice. I've been doing everything, and I've resented it." And she said, "And until this moment, I never realized that for 35 years, Don's been giving me his energy. And I never thanked him." And she turned to him, and he stood up, and she put her arms around him and said, "Thank you, sweetheart." And everybody cried again. Because it was so powerful that what we give to each other when we just give love is amazing. But it's intangible, in a sense. We aren't all that kinesthetic person that feels deeply the love that we're receiving. And I can speak to that powerfully because I know I've been loved all my life, but it's always been very hard for me to feel loved. I know I'm loved. I know people tell me they love me, but I don't always let it in. And to be coming to this place in my life now where I feel love and I feel loved more and more and more of the time when I'm willing to go out and connect with other people in a powerful way and let it in in a way that I can perceive and feel in my heart as love is fresh and new for me. Other people, you know, never had that deficit, so they don't know what it feels like not to feel loved. And I think now that part of the gift of my life is that I went through such a long period of time when I didn't feel loved, that now that I do, I can put it into words in a way that people who've only ever experienced it maybe can't, because they don't have the contrast to work with. But I know now that I am loved. I am loved from the inside out. I am loved by the divine. And I am loved in my life by so many wonderful people who've been here all along, but I didn't necessarily feel it. So we are all giving each other energy all the time. We share our love in such powerful and wonderful ways. And some of the people we share our love with feel it. And some of them get it, and some of them don't. And to be in that place where I am giving love more powerfully, I am comprehending and feeling love more consciously than I ever have before, and I'm acknowledging that love in my life more than ever. And so in my life right now, love rules through law, because I know what I'm doing. I know that I'm choosing love, and I can feel when I'm choosing fear. And I still do it. I still get caught up in being worried or anxious or angry or in some way that is not fully present in love in the moment. But at least now I know when I'm doing it. It doesn't feel like the norm to me anymore. It feels like something out of the ordinary, something that I'm motivated to change. So I invite you to know the love more powerfully, to acknowledge that that's the truth of who you are, to make it conscious. Ernest Holmes said, a trained mind is more powerful than an untrained mind. A trained thought is more powerful than untrained. It's also in this chapter another thing that practitioners talk a lot about. Because as we focus and become conscious of making the choice to love, it's a more powerful choice than when we were doing it unconsciously. Because we choose it when we notice we're not there. And choosing it consciously helps it to expand, not only for us, but for all of the consciousness of humanity. We are grounding love more powerfully in the physical than it's been before, in our own lives, which is the only place we can really do it. And then when we do it, we set the example for other people. And we allow that love to flow, and they feel the energy, they feel the healing, and they say, what happened? What did you do just then? What happened? And you get to share that you shared your energy with them. And some people you never hear about, you know. It happens that years later you hear that something you did made a difference. And so every day you're making a difference by loving. Every day we all are. And some of those things we'll never hear about. But I think that when we get that blast of energy, of seeing the whole truth, when we reemerge into non-physical, that is the experience of knowing the love that we have been, knowing the effect that we've had on other people. And we have the choice to shine that light that we are so powerfully, so beautifully, so expansively in the world. And we can make that choice in every moment of every day, knowing that love is. Love is. Love is. In this breath, love is. In every breath, love is. In every breath everyone else is taking, love is. And we can share it, and we can feel it, and we can know it. And then as we feel it and know it and share it, we can't help but see it. Because love rules through law, and the law brings back to us what we give out. And so if we take in that wave and give it out as love, and take in that wave and give it out as love, what returns to us in the physical world as well as on the inside has to be love. It's law. And that's how the love and the law work together. And it's so amazing, isn't it? Isn't it stunning? I mean, we have such an opportunity to be conscious, to be who we truly are from an awareness. It just moves me so much. Marianne Williamson said, when the wisdom of the heart replaces the chatter of the mind, the power of love flows forth. When the wisdom of the heart replaces the chatter of the mind, the power of love flows forth. And Abraham Hicks said, when you reach the level of giving and receiving love, Source thinks in your mind with an avalanche that you will cherish as life itself, because it is life itself. The energy of love becomes the energy of our thought when we move into that place. The chatter of the mind stills, and then the thought that comes forward is the thought of the divine. It's the love. It's the thoughts of appreciation. It's the thoughts of power. It's the thoughts of caring. And Abraham says it's powerful to meditate because it raises our vibration. But it's even more powerful to appreciate, because when we appreciate, when we give out that love, the other person benefits as well as us. The other thing benefits. If we're loving nature, nature benefits. If we're loving the sun benefits. Because our love matters. Our love makes a difference. So here we are. We get to choose to love. And what an amazing choice that is. Thanks.
Wow.